Got ripped off. Okay, so let's get started. So last week we did the parak where David brings the Aron Kodesh to Yerushalayim. So this week is going to be parak Zion. And we're going to learn this week a little bit differently than we usually do, because what we really, instead of going through pasuk by pasuk, it's a parak where the question is so obvious that we're just going to really focus on the central issue at hand, which is that now that David has brought the Aron Kodesh to Yerushalayim and we have a unified monarchy and we've won the wars and the Plishtim are gone, so we know what's going to happen. David wants to build a base of Mikdash. At first, he's going to go to the prophet Nasan. Nasan is going to tell him, I think that's a great idea. And then Hashem is going to go to Nasan that very night. And Chazal point out that Nasan had to go straight to David that very night because David was so excited to do this that he would have immediately begun building. And Hashem has to tell Nasan, you were incorrect. I do not want David to build a base of Mikdash. And it's going to have to wait until the next generation with Shlomo. So the obvious question is going to be, why? Why is David not building a base of Mikdash right now? The second question is going to be, why is Nasan making this mistake? When do we ever have a case? I don't know if any of you have an example. I do not. An example of a Navi who just assumes that Hashem has said something without bothering to check, and then gets corrected that he's wrong. You know, we have false Nevi'im all the time. We have true Nevi'im all the time. When we have a Navi, you just, you know, assumes like, oh, I don't need to look it up in the Shulchan Aruch because I know the Halacha. And, you know, he gets corrected that night. It's very, very, very strange. Very strange. So I'm going to open up the source sheet 1 second. And we're going to really build up the question of why David can't build the base of the Mikdash, because we're going to see basically the answer to why Nasan made the mistake is that it should have been totally obvious that David is correct. It should have been absolutely obvious that David should be building the base of Mikdash now, and we're going to build that up from 4 different places, okay? We'll make this question stronger and stronger as we go. The first place to look to begin developing this point is the Rambam. The Rambam in the very beginning of Hilchos Beis HaBechira, which is the beginning of the Rambam's discussion of the whole world of the Karbanos. So he begins by telling us that there is a mitzvah to build a house for Hashem. And it's interesting, right? The Rambam does not call it the halachos of the Beis HaMikdash. He calls it the halachos of the Beis HaBechira, the halachos of the chosen house. And this is one of the very few places in the Rambam where he steps out of halacha to begin discussing history. The only one, there totally could be more, the only other ones I'm aware of are in the beginning of Hilchos Avodah Zarah. The Rambam has a whole chapter where he says, let me give you an introduction where I'll tell you the history of the development of idolatry. At the beginning of Hilchos Chanukah, since the laws of Chanukah are not in Tanakh anywhere, the Chanukah story is not in Tanakh, the Rambam tells us, let me tell you what happened in the Chanukah story. And a little bit later in Hilchos Beis HaBechira, the Rambam actually gives us a history of the spot of the Mizbeach. But by and large, the Rambam, Mishnah Torah is not a history book. And yet the first 3 halachos the Rambam has, after he introduces the mitzvah says, say, lasos bayis Hashem. And what is this mitzvah for Hashem? Muchan lios makrivim lo karbanos. The house is supposed to be where we bring offerings to Hashem. V'chogu yenelav shalosh pamim hashana. We're going to go there to do aliyah l'regel. Shenamar Vasuli Mikdash, the Pasuk in Parshas Truma. Then he gets into history. For an aspirish with Torah, we began with the Mishkan Sha'asa Moshe Rabbeinu. Lail of Yisha was a temporary Mishkan. Torah says in Sefer Dvarim, Lo basa marata lo nachla v'al mucha lo nachla. You have not come to the permanent place. So Lacha Aleph, the Rambam says, first we had a Mishkan. Then he continues the history. Lacha Beis. Yevash Nechnusu La'aretz. They got into the land of Israel. So Yoshua takes the people into the land of Israel. They set up the main base in Gilgal, which is like the first city right on the other side of the Jordan River before even getting to Jericho. So that's where the initial Mishkan was. And it was a temporary tent during the 14 years where Yoshua is conquering the land. Then after they complete Yoshua's conquest and the division of the territory, so then they build a quasi-permanent house, Mishambo Lishilo, Banasham Bayashalavanim. They built a stone house. Uparsu Yirios Mishkan Allah Velohaisa Sham Tikra. The Mishkan at Shiloh was it was in between stone walls, but a fabric ceiling. And that was around, says the Rambam, that was around for 669 years. Shinda Samakashana Amma Mishkan Shiloh. Eli dies. It was destroyed. We learned that last year. Bo and Nov Banasham Mikdash. Then they built one in Nov. Shemesh Muel Charav. So we know what happens. Shaul HaMelech destroys it, but the Rambam kind of doesn't get into those details. It was destroyed when Shmuel died. Ubo leGivon uBanu Sham Mikdash. So then they built the new Mishkan in Givon, and then uMiGivon Bo leBeis HaOlamim. Then we go to the Eternal House after Givon. And then we say, once you get to Yerushalayim, the whole halachic scene changes. Kevin did not make this Yerushalayim, and that is the Beis HaBachira, the chosen house, is the one in Yerushalayim, because it's a place, the Makom Asher Yivchar Hashem. Yerushalayim is a place that Hashem has chosen. So once that has happened, Nes Yukola Makulos, Komos Kulon, Livnos, Ben Bias Hashem, Lachir, Ben Karban. Everything changes. Halacha is not allowed to build a house for Hashem anywhere else. You can't bring a Karban anywhere else. The Ein Sham Bayis Ladore Doros El Yerushalayim Bolvad. The only place you build a house in Yerushalayim. Uvar HaMoriah Shabbat. And on the special mountain, Har HaMoriah, which Avram had originally done the Akedah. That's where the Mizbeach is. That's where the Beis HaMikdash is. Why? Shabbat Ne'amar Vayomer David Zehu Beis Hashem Elokim V'zeh Mizbeach Lo'olal Yisrael V'omer Zosu Nechasiyah Dayan. David says, this is the place for Hashem's permanent house. This is the place for the Mizbeach. David is the one who says that. And Hashem testifies, Zosu Nechasiyah Dayan. So we've had a gradual buildup over hundreds of years. Now, finally, we have Yerushalayim. We have the place that Hashem has chosen. We have Har HaMoriah. It took way too long. We managed for that a couple weeks ago. Now we have a place. Why not build a Beis HaMikdash? David is totally right. But saying this is the next step. After all this history, we now have Yerushalayim in hand. The next step is to build a Beis HaMikdash. David seems correct. That's point number one. Point number two. The Gemara in Sanhedrin tells us that there were three mitzvos in Bnei Yisrael at the land of Israel. To have a king, to wipe out a Amalek, and to build the Beis HaBechira. Now, by the time we get to Shmuel Beis, Perek Zion, we have accomplished two of those three. Obviously, we have a king. We had Shaul, and now we have David. What about Amalek? Well, David basically wiped out Amalek at the end of Shmuel Aleph. They're basically gone. So now it's time to build the Beis HaBechira. That's what it sounds like from the Gemara, is exactly what we should do. David is established as king. He's eliminated the threats. He's eliminated Amalek. It's time to build the Beis HaBechira. By the way, the Gemara has an interesting debate right here. Which one should come first? Beis HaBechira or wiping out Amalek, right? The problem with Amalek, we know, is that Amalek limits Hashem's presence in the world. Yad al kes ka. So is the response first bring Hashem in with the Beis HaMikdash and then wipe out Amalek? Or do we say, no, first you have to wipe out Amalek and only then can you build the Beis HaMikdash? That's an interesting debate. We pass in, Beis HaBechira comes last, but now is the time. Problem number two. We look at Divrei HaYamim, and if we get a sense of what has been happening in the world, it makes the question even more shocking. Because it is not like David wakes up in the middle of nowhere in Shmuel Perek Zion and says, oh, wouldn't it be nice to have a Beis HaMikdash? The Navi, the Ksuvim tell us that Bnei Yisrael have been preparing for this moment for generations. The Psukim are telling us about the different jobs of some of the different Levim that David is giving. David spends a lot of time assigning roles to the Levim. So there's this guy, Shlomos, and his brothers. And the pasuk tells us that these people are in charge of the kudshim, asher hikdish David hamelach rashei avot Yisrael lafim yot Yisrael tzava. So there was a lot of money which was dedicated to hikdish. What does this mean? Menachemot ben Ashalal hikdish lachazek lebeis Hashem. There was a lot of very much spoil whenever they fought a battle. So they would bring some of it to the treasury, and it's being reserved to build a house for Hashem. And it was not only David in his wars, but look how far back this collection goes. The pasuk tells us explicitly. V'chol ha'itish Shmuel haroa. V'shol ben kish v'avner ben ner v'yov ben tzuria kol ha'matish al yashlom esachav. Four generations, every leader of Bnei Yisrael in their battles has been reserving a piece of the spoils for the eventual building of the Beis HaMikdash. Yoav the general, Avner the general, Shaul the king, even Shmuel the Navi, as long as we've had a united Bnei Yisrael, and Bnei Yisrael have been united since the time of Shmuel, that was Shmuel's major accomplishment, they have been gradually putting money in the bank for building the Beis HaMikdash. So it's not brand new, and now seems like the time. We have the money, we have the king, Amalek is gone, we have the city, we have Yerushalayim, and now the last thing, and this is the one which just, we'll see how the Navi is going to rub the question in our faces. It's going to make it, it's going to go over the top with how obvious the problem is. Torah tells us in, say, in Parashas Ve'eh, in Sefer Dvarim, so you're going to get eventually, right, the Parak Yud Beis of Dvarim is telling us that once we're in land of, that once we're in Israel, so things are going to change, at least the way that we paskin. When Bnei Yisrael were in the desert for 40 years and they had a Mishkan right next door, you did not have your own personal barbecue. If you wanted to have meat, just walk down the street to the Mishkan, bring a karban shlamim. You'll give some of the meat to Hashem, some of the meat to the Kohen. Most of the meat will go to you. And that was protocol in the Mishkan, in the Midbar for 40 years. So the Torah says in Devarim, Yerchak mimcha hamakom, you're going to be far away. You're going to be in Eretz Yisrael, Baruch Hashem. The borders will expand. You're going to have people in the north and people in the south, and not everybody is down the block from Yerushalayim. So you are going to be allowed to eat meat wherever you want. But at the same time, so the Torah tells us we're going to build a Beis HaMikdash, and it's going to be in a particularly special place. So right, Torah says, Lo ba'asamar atalam nuchal anachal Hashem Hashem ka'kanosilach. You have not yet gotten to the permanent place. Chazal Darshan, one referring to Shila, one referring to the Beis HaMikdash. Now what's going to happen? You're going to get into the Jordan, you're going to cross Jordan River, you're going to get the land of Israel. And then, once all your enemies have, once Hashem has given you rest from your enemies and you have security, then after you have the peace, whatever place Hashem chooses to dwell, for his name to dwell there, that's where you're going to bring all of your kapanos. So that's where the Torah tells us that once Hashem chooses Yerushalayim, we're not going to bring karbanos anywhere else. But what was this moment in history when after all the years of the battles of Yehoshua and the battles of the Shoftim and the battles of Shmuel and Shaul, when do we reach the point of hiniach lachem mikol avecha misaviv, where you have rest from your enemies? So Rashi here says on the spot, this was the moment of David. David is one who sees this. David just wiped out Amalek. David wipes out the Plishtim. Finally, after all those years, we have mikol avecha misaviv yishavtem betach. It happens in the time of David. So we have the city, we have the king, we have exactly the conditions. The Torah says, when you have this, it's going to be time to build the Beis HaMikdash. So Hashem's chosen the city, the Aaron's been successfully brought there, and we have peace. And Rashi doesn't get this out of nowhere, because take a look at what the Navi begins the parak with. Down here, Vahiki Yeshav HaMelech Beveso, Vashem Inyech Lo Misaviv Mikol Aivav. The Navi copies word for word the line from Sefer Dvar. The Varim, we were told, exactly what the Navi says. We have it. The conditions have met. Hashem hiniach lo misaviv mikol aivav. The enemies are gone. The enemies are gone. Take a look at what Rashi says here in Shmuel on the pasuk. So Rashi says, great. So David said, Hare niskayim v'niach lachem mikol aivechem. Maksiv acharav. What's the next stage? Hayal makom asher yivchar. So now it's time. Me'ata leinu liv mosveis habachira. We have Yerushalayim, we have security. David is correct. We've been waiting for this for generations, and now we finally have the moment. Let's go. Let's do this. So now we can totally understand why David goes to Nasan the Navi, and this is the first time that Nasan the Navi shows up. Well, I'll keep this in mind, by the way, when we get to the story of David and Bathsheba in a few weeks. The only two times in Sefer Shmuel we see Nasan appear, One is going to be in this parak, and one is going to be the story of David and Bathsheba. And those two prophecies that Nasan has are going to have a lot, are going to have very strong relationships with each other. So David says to Nasan, says, how could I dwell in this beautiful cedar palace, which we built two prakim ago when Hiram, the king of Tsur, who lives in Lebanon, where they have all the cedar wood. So I have a beautiful palace. And we just brought in the Aaron, and it lives in a tent. This isn't right. It's time to build the Beis HaMikdash. And Nasan says, you're absolutely right. You're right. Hashem is with you. Nasan thinks it's so obvious, and we can understand why. He thinks it's so obvious that David should be building the Beis HaMikdash. He doesn't even need to bother to ask. He can assume that Hashem is with him. It is obvious to him. Truth is, we should give David the credit for even asking. We see David's dedication to always asking the Urim V'Tumim, always asking the Navi. Even here, when it seems like ABC, so it'd be like, you know, I'm calling up, you know, say, Rabbi, should I put tefillin on in the morning? Obviously, the answer is yes. Of course, it's time to build the Beis HaMikdash. David asks the question anyway, and while David thought it was enough to ask a shayla, Nasan didn't think it needed a shayla. He thinks that it's obvious, and we can understand why. So that just deepens the question, right? So why on earth is David going to get the answer now? So Navi just tells us, are you going to build me a house? And then Hashem continues, you're not going to build me a house. I never had a house until now. I had a tent, I had a Mishkan. I was totally fine. You know, if it's hot or cold, no central air conditioning, the Shekhinah doesn't really care. I don't need a Mishkan. I don't need a Beis HaMikdash. Wherever I went, we've had hundreds of years since we went into Eretz Yisrael. Was there ever a complaint to one of the Nevi'im that you guys are slacking in building a Beis HaMikdash? No. There were complaints about Avodah Zarah. There were complaints about murder and Gilui Arayos and theft and everything that we saw with the sons of Eli and Peleg HaShmegeva and Pesel Micha. Hashem complained about plenty of things. He's never complained that they did not build a Beis HaMikdash. So the confusion just deepens because, well, hold on a second. We know there's a mitzvah to build a Beis HaMikdash. We know that from the Pesukim in Devarim. And we know that because Hashem is going to tell David that your son will build a Beis HaMikdash for him. So why does Hashem say no? Why does Hashem open his message by saying, are you going to build me a house? You're going to build a house for God? God doesn't need a house. God doesn't want a house. So mimanavsha, either we should have a mitzvah to build one or we shouldn't. But how can Hashem tell David, I don't need a house, but then tell, we have a mitzvah to build one, and Hashem will tell David that your son is going to build one for him? What is going on? What is wrong with building a Beis HaMikdash? And then Hashem just moves on, seemingly. You know, as the Hashem's answer to the question just deepens the question, and then Hashem drops it, and Hashem goes on for pasuk after pasuk. Tell Kosomar la'avdi David. Tell my servant David. Remember a few weeks ago we saw that Avner ben Ner was the first one to call David a servant of Hashem. It was the same time he was the first one to call David a king. Well, Hashem endorses the title. Hashem says that David is my servant. So Karmar Hashem Tzivakos, right, which we know from Chana means Hashem, the master of everything, that I took you out from the sheep. I took you out from the sheep, and I've been with you wherever you go, and I've made you famous, and I've given Israel land, and they're going to be very safe, and no one's going to bother them anymore. And then Hashem goes on and on to say all the wonderful things that I've done for David. You're going to have a house after you die. Your son is going to build a Beis HaMikdash. I'm going to establish his reign. I'll be for a father for him. He'll be a son for me. You're going to have a permanent, this is the first time we see the permanent base David. Malchus is David. Ne'eman beischam lachtacha ad olam lefanecha. Right? Kisacha yeh nachon ad olam. Your house, your dynasty will last forever. So we close the book and we're like, what on earth is going on? What's going on? Right? You see the Navi, it's not just we have the question. The Navi invites the question with the beginning by bringing in the pasuk from Devarim and by having Nasan think it's obvious. And then it almost sounds like Hashem, he gives an answer that doesn't make any sense internally, just the pasuk on themselves. I mean, really? Who Yivneli Bayis Hashmi? He's going to build me a house. I want a Beis HaMikdash. So why isn't David correct that now is the time to build? That's what we need to figure out. So we'll see two basic approaches to this question. So one, you might be thinking this already. So hold on a second. I thought David couldn't build a Beis HaMikdash because didn't the Navi tell us that David couldn't build a Beis HaMikdash because he killed too many people? You know, we've heard this this of our Torah, that David was engaged in violence, and violence is against the world of the Beis HaMikdash. Beis HaMikdash has to be a place of peace. And so that's why, even though David was wonderful, he couldn't build the Beis HaMikdash. So it's not made up. It comes from a pasuk. The problem is it comes from a pasuk in Divrei HaYamim. So we need to understand is what exactly is happening in Divrei HaYamim. And how does the message there square with the message in Shmuel? Because it seemed like in Sefer Shmuel, there was no reference to this idea whatsoever. So we'll see the pasuk. We'll see an amazing piece from the Radak, and then we'll try to develop a second approach. So Divrei HaYamim, this happens twice actually. In Perachav Beis, so David tells Shlomo what the plan is, and then again in Perachav Ches, towards the end of Divrei HaYamim Aleph, they break up Divrei HaYamim at the point where David dies. So at the end of Divrei HaYamim Aleph, Hashem talks to all of Israel, and he tells them what the game plan is. And he explains why he has not built a house for Hashem, why that job is going to fall to Shlomo. So here David tells Shlomo, he says, I wanted to build a house for Hashem, really wanted to. However, Vahi alai devar Hashem limor, dam larov shafachta, you spilt much blood, umachamas kadolas asisa, you fought many wars, many great wars. Lo sivne vayas lashmi, you will not build me a house. Kidamim rabim shafach tar tzalafanek, because you spilled much blood before. Okay, so you're going to have another son. Hu ye ish menucha, you'll have a son who is a man of rest. Manichos lo mekol ayavav misaviv, you see that, right? You see that? That's the line from Devarim. He will have respite from all of his enemies. Ki shlomo yeshemo, all right, peace will be in his very name. V'shalom v'sheket etin al yisrael v'yamav, his days we will have peace, and he will build the house for me. Right? Hu yev li levein vani lo la'av. So that was the line. That line was indeed in our Nevuah in Sefer Shmuel, where Hashem tells David through Nasan that I'll be the son, I'll be a father to him. He will be like a son to me. But this piece before, we did not see anywhere in Nasan's prophecy. So we need to understand what it means, and we need to understand why it's not in Sefer Shmuel. Who cares that David killed people? Who cares that David fought wars? Was that wrong? I mean, those wars were called the Melchamos Hashem. They were called the wars of Hashem. Why is it bad to fight in a war? I mean, you know, Pinchas kills people and he becomes the Kohen Gadol. Why can't Shlomo is going to kill people when he first becomes king, and David is going to tell Shlomo, look, you know, I'm leaving you a whole bunch of problems you got to deal with. So what is the problem? Just the fact of killing people certainly cannot be, or seems like it cannot be enough. That's one problem. And why isn't this the Sefer Shmuel? So first let's look at the Radak. And we need to look at basically this whole thing, because every piece in this Radak is really, really, that's amazing. So Radak asks the question. The Radak says, there in Divrei HaYamim, let's hold on. Zeh lo matzino lo shamar lo Hashem. We never found Hashem tell this to David. David is telling us this in Sefer Divrei HaYamim, but the only prophecy we have on the record from Sefer Shmuel, we never found this message. So where did it come from? So the Radak suggests, Abel David, Amar Kain, Beliba. This was David's understanding of why he was being told he couldn't build a Beis HaMikdash. That's the Radak's first proposal. Seems like he thinks that's the pshat, is that David got the message from Nasan. He didn't really get any compelling reason why he shouldn't build the Beis HaMikdash. So the one that he personally ascribed, and it seems like he was correct because, you know, took him to bring it for us as if it's true, but that it was David's religious self-intuition. Okay, hold on to that, because that is going to tell us a lot about David from the next thing that the Radak is going to say. The Radak also suggests, okay, or Nasan and Aviyam are looking, or Nasan said it, and it was off the books. And that's not such a big deal, because that happens all the time. I'll find you many examples of places in Divrei Hayamim where we're told things that we're not told in Sefer Shmuel. So maybe it was just an off-the-books prophecy. A little weird, because, you know, why? That could be true, but why would the Navi drop it? Right? If that's true, the Navi is dropping it for a reason. Or David is intuiting it himself. Okay, so that's just explaining why it's not there. Now, what does it mean? Who cares that David shed blood? Who cares that David shed blood? So the Radak takes this on also. And what is the blood that he shed? Now, there's no way, right, that this is talking about, let's say, Amalek or Goliath, yeah, or Rechav and Bana, right? Those criminals who assassinated Ish-bosheth a few weeks ago. There's no way that's going to stop Hashem, for David from building a Beis HaMikdash, because we know Shlomo builds a Beis HaMikdash after he executes criminals. So there has to be something more than just having had somebody killed. So explains the Radak. He says, what was the blood? And he has three suggestions, which all come together. The problem was not blood. It was that David shed innocent blood. Dam nekiyim. Kemo dam Uriah. So that's the easiest candidate, is that David kills Uriah Hachiti. David doesn't directly kill him, and David will have rationalizations for doing so, but David will be responsible for the death of Uriah. So that's one possibility. And the Radak continues, V'gam d'mei ha-kohanim ayahu ha-siba. When Shaul massacred the Kohanim at Nob, we saw that one of the responsible parties was David's negligence. David's total negligence in going to the Mishkan and asking for bread and then taking the sword of Goliath. We saw that David realized that. David took responsibility. Classic David, even though it would have been easy to blame someone else, right? David did immediately say that I was responsible. He told Eviasar in Shmuel Aleph, Anochi Sebosi, told Nevesh Mesavicha, I am going responsible. So that's a second example. And then the Radak, take a look at this. You never have said this, but the Radak says it. V'gam b'dmei ha-goyim asher shafa. When David fought all his wars against the surrounding nations, Osam Shalohayu B'nai Melchamto, some were not, you know, it was not only soldiers who were killed, there were civilians who were killed as well. David's going to kill a lot of civilians in the next couple of prakim. And he says, Afshar Shahayu Behema Nashim Tovim Chasidim. It could be that there were some good people who were wiped out in David's wars. And that is enough. That's amazing, right? The fact that the idea that David killed, in David's wars, there were, you know, good pagans from Ammon and Moab and Edom who were killed. That is enough for David to not build the Beis HaMikdash. That's an amazing idea. Now, the Radak says, you know, look, Hashem is not, David's not punished for this, because David's just trying to fight wars against all the evil nations around us. But that's going to be too much for him to build the Beis HaMikdash. Now, we should just note that if the Radak, according to the Radak's first understanding, that this is David's own approach. So what's amazing is that we see, once again, David's self-reflection and David's total readiness to identify misdeeds in himself and identify opportunities for tshuva. Because the prophecy he got, according to the first approach, was just, I don't need a Beis HaMikdash. David stops for a second and says, wait, this makes no sense. My son is going to build you a Beis HaMikdash. It must be that there's something I did wrong, which Hashem is not telling me. He reflects on himself and he says, ah, I am not building a Beis HaMikdash because of the blood that I had shed. So this is a process, right? The Pasuk in Divrei Hayamim is inviting us into David's own Cheshbon HaNefesh, which is just an amazing idea. Now, why can't he build the Beis HaMikdash? So the Radak brings in one other piece, where he says, well, what does the Torah tell us at the end of Parshas Yisro? The idea, right? Im yem mizbach avadim tasli osav na len gazis, yicharba enaf telach abat techal leav. You cannot build me, right, a mizbeach of hewn stones because you can't wave your sword over it. So the Radak suggests, and the Ramban really develops this idea, the reason why you can't use iron to cut the stones for the mizbeach is because the world of iron and the world of the sword is the antithesis of the world of the Beis HaMikdash. Now the Ramban takes this a couple steps further because the Ramban says, who is associated with the Cherev? Well, the man who's associated with the Cherev is Esav. Al Charba Chatechya, you're going to live by your sword. And that's the exact, the world of Esav is the exact antithesis of what we stand for. It says Lachin, Lo Yuva Beis Hashem. Okay, now I want to come back to that Esav idea in just a second, but that is the first main approach. Peace is essential for the Beis HaMikdash. David is engaged in war, and not just war, but war which goes too far. Maybe it was inevitably going to go too far. If you're really going to fight so hard against such enemies to establish the peace for Bnei Yisrael, maybe it's going to be necessary collateral damage. But it's collateral damage nonetheless. And as much as we care about Tohar HaNeshek, the sins, we can forgive ourselves, but that can't get baked into the Beis HaMikdash. It just can't. There has to be a higher standard for the Beis HaMikdash than for anything else. And so that's why David is not building the Beis HaMikdash. Okay, that's one main approach. Problem is, that has nothing to do with the Pesukim in Shmuel, right? Like, why is this nowhere in Nussan's message? So even if it is, we could say it's totally, absolutely true, but at minimum, we need to understand that there is a separate message that Nassan is giving, right? Even if we say like the Radak, that David realized that Nassan wasn't giving him all the information, so David has to reflect, or Nassan tells him off the books. And with that Cheshbon HaNefesh, we understand, and we unlock this massive insight into the Beis HaMikdash. We can totally accept all that, but we still need to understand what was the message that he was giving David in Sefer Shmuel. Like, what was he telling him when he said, are you going to build me a Beis HaMikdash? Do I need a house? So I think the second way to understand, and these are totally, these go with each other, but I think the way to understand what is happening in the parak here is just take a look at one line from the Malbim, and then we're gonna try to go back to David's original statement. So one of the things that Nassan tells David is that Bayis Yaseh Lecha Hashem. Hashem will make you a house, right? We're going to have the royal house of David. So the Malbim has a great line. Malbim says, Betzalomar, Shelo at Tivne Besa. You're not going to build Hashem's house. Rak, who Yivne Besa? Hashem is going to build your house. Tacha Sheretzit, Livnos Besa. Okay, it's a reward. You wanted to build the house for God. God's going to build the house for you. But the idea, and this is certainly the message of the Nevuah, I mean, the Dot Mikra points out, the most common word, I think it's like 15 times in the parak, is bias. The word house comes up again and again and again. David wants to build Hashem a house, and Hashem builds David a house. I think that can also be the key to understanding why this is not the time, and David is not the person to be doing this. Go back for a second. We're going to look at what David originally says. We're going to see that there's a basic mistake, a basic problem in David's perspective on a Beis HaMikdash, in his original request. Because why does David want to build Hashem a house? David said, I live in a cedar palace and the Aron of Hashem is in a tent. Right? The reason why David thinks Hashem needs a house, he thinks it's not appropriate for the Shekhinah to have a Mishkan. Right? He's thinking of it laudable, but he's thinking of it in terms of kavod for the Ribbono Shel Olam. It is not appropriate for the Shekhinah to be in a tent. We need to do something for the Ribbono Shel Olam. We need to build a house for Hashem. We need to do this for him. And Hashem's response is, you're misunderstanding the Beis HaMikdash. I do not need a Beis HaMikdash for me. I do not need a house for me. I commanded Bnei Yisrael to build a Mishkan, and the Mishkan was great for hundreds of years. If it's for me, I don't need the Beis HaMikdash. Who is the Beis HaMikdash for? What's the purpose of building a Beis HaMikdash? Why do we have to have it in Yerushalayim? Why does it have to wait until the very end? Why do we have to be settled from all our enemies before we build the Beis HaMikdash? Why do we have to have a king? Why do we have to get rid of a Malek? In theory, Hashem could have told Yeshua, here's the deal. Whatever you're going to do, make sure you take Yerushalayim, build the Beis HaMikdash. The first thing, build the Beis HaMikdash, and then you'll finish everything else. Why is the Beis HaMikdash the last thing we're supposed to do after the rest of Yishuv Haaretz has been completed? So the Chasipra Chima, who always gives reasons for the mitzvah, so he has a long, long piece, we'll see the most important part of it, about the reason for building a Beis HaMikdash. And the important point is that it has nothing to do with building a house for God. We do not build a house for God. It's absurd. Right? What does Yeshaya say? Eze bayis asher tivnu li. What house could you build for me? The whole idea in of itself is absurd. A house for an infinite, non-corporeal being makes absolutely no sense. Why do we have a mitzvah to build a Beis HaMikdash? So Sefer HaChinuch said, let's take a look. So, so think about the mitzvahs. Why do we build a house? And that will be the place for our davening and for our karbanos. And notice, by the way, he just puts tefillah first, then karbanos. Hakol lahachin alavavos lavodosius ale. The point of a Beis HaMikdash is to prepare our hearts for serving him. Lo miyoso tzarach lasheves bein anashim velavo b'tzel karosam. It's not because God needs to dwell among men and he needs us to build some shady house for him. It's not for him. It's all for us. We're going to build a fancy cedar palace. I mean, come on. You know, the heavens can't contain God. So we're going to build him a house. It's absurd, right? Afki abayis asher banu bnei adam tzarach kavodo chalila. God forbid that Hashem needs our house. We're not doing it for him, we're doing it for us. We're doing it for us. Because the whole point is the hachshir gufa senu. It's to purify us. This is the Sefer HaChinuch's landmark idea that our actions then influence our thoughts, right? We do something and it shapes us in a certain way. And you're going to have a Beis HaMikdash. You're going to have a place in the heart of Yerushalayim, in the heart of Eretz Yisrael, a place of unlimited purity and sanctity, and it's a place for you to visit. It's a place for you to go three times a year. It's a place for you to bring your kabanos. It's a place for you to connect. The whole point of the Beis HaMikdash is a place for us to serve him. It is not something for Hashem. And I think that is the original mistake that David makes. And from a good place, David says, we should build Hashem a house. And if we take it one step further, we can understand why it is that it's so important to wait until the very end. If Bnei Yisrael had built Hashem a Beis HaMikdash early in the process, right? Let's say before they finished conquering the land. Well, we would think of this as a quid pro quo. We build Hashem a Beis HaMikdash, and then he will give us peace and security. The way that people honestly normally think of karbanos. I give Hashem a gift, he will take care of it. And that's also wrong, but that's how people think of building a Beis HaMikdash. If we build him a temple, he will dwell among us and protect us. Reason why we wait until the very, very end, right? Why do we wait until the completion of Yishuv Haaretz is the building of the Beis HaMikdash? Because the Beis HaMikdash is not us giving to God. The Beis HaMikdash really is the last thing that Hashem has given to us. Once he has given us total peace and security, and there is nothing else that we need, well, at the moment that there's nothing else that we need, and we think we have everything else, well, there's one thing that we still need. And the one thing that we still need is that house to be entirely, for us to go up to Hashem. If it was at the beginning, we would think we were building it for him. but we need to understand that we are not building it for him. What's really, really happening is that he is going to be doing it for he's going to be doing it for us. And that is why David, that's why Hashem tells David, you know, I have done so much for you, right? I took you from zero. We need to wait until the next generation. You're totally correct. Yeah, we have peace. And by the end of David's reign, you know, I saw some people who suggest that David thought that there was peace, but David was wrong because we're going to fight more wars in a couple of prakim. But by the end, David is going to have peace. But the point is not that it's not enough for the people to have peace. We need a king who is not a man of action. We need a king who does not think that he is doing for God. Remember, right? The Ramban invoked Esav. We know that David has a piece of Esav in him. David redeems that Esav. David takes that the Malbim said he took that energy, that warlike energy, and he dedicated it towards fighting the Melchamos Hashem. But that Esav-ness in David meant that David was a man of action. And he had a lot of action to do. I mean, Hashem took him from nothing, and there was so much to build. But if you are coming to the Beis HaMikdash thinking of this as another activity, another action, another job for me to do for him, that's the wrong mindset. And that maybe is why David is not the one to build a Beis HaMikdash. We need someone who is a man of Shalom, who's an Ish Menucha, as the Pasuk in Divrei Hayamim said, person who is not really a man of action. He's a man of sitting, a man of contemplation, because a man who's not a man of action is the one who, when they build the Beis HaMikdash, they say, no, that was not something he did for me, right? The biggest building project ever was done by somebody who wasn't a man of action. How does that make any sense? And because that's the whole idea. We shouldn't think of the Beis HaMikdash something that we built for him, right? And that's why Hashem goes on and on, says, you have it backwards. You're not building a house for me. I'm building a house for you. And that's true in the narrow sense, as the Malbim said, of the royal house. But ultimately, that's also true of the Beis HaMikdash. The bias of David and the bias of the Beis HaMikdash are blended together in Nasan's whole prophecy. And I think that is the message that Nasan is trying to give. So just to take a couple of minutes to finish the parak, because there's one like beautiful insight, I think, that Rav Amnon Bazak has in the VBM on the conclusion of the parak. So after David gets this message, and again, I mean, and David has dreamed of this moment. So David goes to the Mishkan. He goes before Hashem. The Navi literally says, "Vayeshev lefnei Hashem." He sits before Hashem, and the Radak says that's where Chazal derived from that a king is the only one who's allowed to sit in the Azara in the Beis HaMikdash. So on the one hand, there's this beautiful moment of intimacy, right? Real love between Hashem and the Ribono Shel Olam. And then David gives this very, very, very long tefillah. So 2 points about it. Number one, just look how many times in that tefillah David calls himself Hashem's servant, right? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Over and over again, he's calling himself Hashem's Eved, right? What we saw last week, you know, David struggling to balance the Ava and the Yira. David's found that balance. He found that balance last week. He can come sit by himself, have this long conversation, this long heartfelt outburst to Ribono Shel Olam, maybe even sitting before him, and yet simultaneously call himself an Eved again and again and again. But Urbazak proposes, and I think it's a beautiful idea to close. He says, if you look at the Pesukim, one thing we see is that they're very, very long. And we don't even go into the details, but it often seems like David has run-on sentences. I mean, the same David HaMelech, when we looked at his kinos and we saw every word was in the right place and the structure was like a beautiful, organized masterpiece where everything is exactly where it is supposed to go. David kind of just goes on and on and on over here about how much chesed Hashem has done for him and for all of B'nai Yisrael. And you're just like, the most blatant example is Pasach of Gimel, where he says, Mika Amcha Yisrael. We know that line. Mika Amcha Yisrael, Gayacha Ba'aretz, Asher Halchu Lelkim, Liftos Lelam, Lelashum, Sum Lo Shem. He took them out. The last of Zacham Agdula, No Ros, Artsacha, doing these amazing things. Mipnei Amcha, Asher Padisa Lelcha Mitzrayim. Once again, repeating, you took them out of Egypt. Goyim velokav, nation of God. It on and on. So he just proposes that what the Navi is giving us here is a window into David's emotions at the moment, right? What does David do? David just feels this amazing outpouring of love and closeness to Hashem. Because he's been told he's not going to build the base of Mikdash, which is a blow. It's been his life's dream. But he's also told that, you know, his house is going to be established as the permanent dynasty for all time. David comes to the Aron, and he just has an outpouring. And it's not a moment for structure and poetry. It's just Dvar Min Halev. And the Navi gives us, you know, we're Pasuk after Pasuk after Pasuk to just give us a sense, right? I mean, you know, David's heart has, we have how many Prakim of Tehillim, right? So we got a window of that in here. You know, on the one hand, David is somebody who, the man of action, not the man to build the Beis HaMikdash. That's going to require a new generation which really has everything else. But even though he's not the man to build the Beis HaMikdash, well, he is going to be the one to pave the way. We can see why David puts on full display at the end of the parak exactly why he was the one chosen to be the permanent Melech. Okay.